Hello, I'd like to welcome everybody to tonight's addclasses.com teleseminar, Becoming Focused, Aware, and Self-Directed, Mindfulness Training for Adult ADHD with Dr. Lydia Zelweska. And welcome, and I'm going to hand everything over to you right now.
Thank you, Tara. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you, everyone, for joining us. I'm Lydia Zelweska. I'm a psychiatrist specializing in mindfulness-based approaches in mental health. I'm also a co-founder and faculty member at the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center. And my work has been in combining mindfulness approaches in particularly adult ADHD. And today I'll be speaking about developing a program to address ADHD symptoms. So as we start, I just wanted to ask all of you to take a moment to notice how you're feeling right now. Just check in with your posture and your body. And I imagine most of you are sitting in front of a phone. And just take a moment to connect with how you're sitting, how your weight feels in a chair or wherever you are. And adjust however you need to be comfortable and allow this moment to be a more comfortable and aware moment for you. And it often helps to just take a couple deep breaths just to notice how you're breathing and allow yourself to just be. Nothing to change, but just allowing yourself to arrive. I know many of us rush into the, from one thing to another. So if you're rushing to get here, I'd like to invite you to just center yourself. And I'd like to start this conversation by a quote from William James, a psychologist from the 19th century, who spent a lot of time thinking about attention. And he says, my experience is what I agree to attend to. My experience is what I agree to attend to. And it's a quote I really like because it points to the fact that our lives are very much shaped by attention. And what we see, what we don't see, is very much based on our purposeful placement of attention. And I'm bringing it up because it's such an important issue for ADHD. Oftentimes in ADHD, attention is pulled by so many different things, external things, reacting to our environment, to other people. And oftentimes, your experience is not self-directed. Oftentimes it's kind of shaped by what's going on around you. So I want to bring your awareness to that, that attention is such a critical aspect. And it's not a bad news for ADHD. It's actually a good news because attention is something that we can notice. We actually can pay attention to attention. And we can train and strengthen our ability to bring it to the present moment or bring it to whatever we wanted to bring it, so be more in charge of where the attention is and in a way strengthen that capacity. And mindfulness is very much about that, knowing where your attention is, bringing it to what you intend it to be on. Often we train mindfulness by bringing attention to the present moment and noticing different aspects of the present moment, and in that way training awareness, training, self-monitoring, and giving ourselves a choice to what happens to our mind or to our reactions. And this is very much in contrast to the automatic pilot. So the automatic pilot is a common concept in mindfulness because it's a description of how we often are in the course of a day. So doing things without thinking, doing them mechanically, and not always being aware of what we're doing. And that's not necessarily a bad thing in the sense that it's a function of learning. If we're doing something in a habitual way, something we've been doing many times in a repeated way, we start doing it in an automatic way. And we don't have to expend cognitive energy to do it anymore. For example, driving. If you drive, you know, your first driving lesson, you pay very much attention to, a lot of attention to all the details of driving. But after a while, when you're a seasoned driver, it happens automatically. So it's a function of learning. However, automatic pilot can get us in trouble when it comes to learned and habitual ways of thinking and being and acting, often reacting out of maybe previous experiences or kind of our tendencies, and we don't always know that we're doing it. And in ADHD, habits are, you know, they're kind of double-edged sword. It's good to make some habits so you don't have to pay attention, for example, to where you're putting keys. So having an automatic reaction to put your keys in the same spot is a good thing. So these are helpful automatic habits. But often, especially if you haven't spent time understanding ADHD or reading about it, you may be doing things that are ADHD patterns automatically. For example, interrupting, being impulsive, spacing out in a sense, or having the mind get easily distracted by things. And that's not always, in your consciousness that this is happening. So it helps to bring understanding and to step out of that automatic pilot. And mindfulness training is very much about that, learning to step back from the automatic pilot, having more understanding and more awareness of what is happening, and from that, making a choice about whether I want to continue what I'm doing or do I want to change. And mindfulness, as many of you know, is a type of meditation practice. It is based in Buddhist practices. But in the last several decades, there's been a lot of interest in bringing mindfulness into the clinical setting for treatment of different conditions, particularly for management of stress. And there's been a lot of excitement in trying to bring cognitive sciences, neurosciences, and the contemplative practices like mindfulness in understanding what can be done to shift how our mind is working, how we are reacting to things, to foster positive psychological skills, and ultimately psychological wellness. And mindfulness is used a lot in different contexts nowadays. You may be seeing it a lot in the general media, and it's often used in a context of treatment, but also in education, leadership, and just as a technique to counteract our culture. And a lot of people say our culture is an ADD culture, meaning we have so many opportunities for distraction. And I think especially with adults with ADHD, that can be amplifying the difficulty that's already there because of how the ADD brain works or how the natural tendency is. I wanted to point out that there's so many different facets to mindfulness or how it comes up in our culture, but one way I want to focus on is mindfulness as a universal capacity of the mind, or mindfulness as a mental state that we can all enter into or exit out of, or something that we can tap into or rediscover, because it's something that many of us have experienced already. Mindfulness can be turned on spontaneously. So whenever there is a situation in which we are paying attention on purpose to the present moment, when we are noticing the change from moment to moment, we are mindful, and we may not know we're mindful. For example, if you ever done relaxing, for example, and watching the clouds and how they're changing or configuring themselves, and there's that attentive watching of moment by moment change, that in many ways has qualities of the mindful state. And the mindful state of mind can be entered by doing two steps. One is attention, bringing attention to the present moment, and the other one is attitude, or bringing on an attitude of acceptance, openness, non-judgment, curiosity. And those two things are very important because we want to be aware and paying attention to what's happening without biases, without preconceived notions, without expectations, without sense of this is good or this is bad. It's this non-reactive, very open stance that actually can expand perception and can help us notice things inside of us and outside of us, which perhaps we would not otherwise notice. And mindfulness sometimes is misunderstood as being lost in the moment. You're kind of paying attention to the present moment and you forget about other things. But that's really not a proper understanding of mindfulness. Mindfulness, and this has a big implication for ADHD, is about focusing, and we use the present moment as a place to focus on, or different aspects of the present moment, the place to focus on. But it's also about monitoring of attention, monitoring of awareness, remembering, for example, remembering your intention to bring your attention to breathing. That's a very common practice. So there's very much this ongoing remembering and monitoring. And in addition, learning to just be open and non-reactive. And mindfulness has a lot of applications for ADHD. I often think of it as both a way to kind of recharge, replenish, and also as a way to develop skills. And Dr. Barclay, as many of you know, an expert in ADHD, talks about the condition. He often describes it as self-regulation difficulty, and the idea of self-regulation tank, or this capacity for self-regulation, being a finite capacity that can be depleted by things. So, for example, self-regulation means, being an example of it would be being patient when your child needs attention, and you may be tired or you may be frustrated in some way. And yet you withhold that reaction, you self-regulate or control that reaction because you want to respond to your child in a positive way. Or even, being in a checkout and waiting for your turn, that's another way of self-regulating. And doing that typically depletes willpower. The more we use willpower, the more we deplete it. So mindfulness is a way, or these moments of tuning in and relaxation can help recharge the self-regulation tank. In addition, mindfulness, by training attention, by training self-monitoring, and especially by learning to tune into the inner experiences of thoughts and feelings, can teach also self-regulation skills. And through that, we have a choice about our behavior or about our responses. And current research with mindfulness has shown that it can improve different cognitive and emotional facets. And most of the research I want to highlight has been done with groups of people who are not ADHD. There's a little bit of research that we did at UCLA as well as at other places, primarily with adults or parents with ADHD, and I'll mention that in a moment. But most of the current research, which is very much growing, is with adults or children that are not ADHD. But I want to highlight them because the results of the studies touch on the areas very relevant to ADHD. Such as attention. So we know that mindfulness training appears to improve attention. And if we look across the studies, the initial exercises in mindfulness training often improve the executive attention, or attention that has to do with paying attention during distractions, or selecting the object of attention despite distractions. As we engage with mindfulness practice, the later aspects of the practice, train what's called receptive attention. And that has to do more with alerting or sustained attention. And so depending on the duration or the type of practice, different aspects of attention are enhanced by mindfulness. We also have an interesting study done recently with working memory, looking at mindfulness effects on working memory. And as many of you know, working memory, or the ability to keep things in mind or kind of manipulate information in your mind, is important in ADHD. And we know that stress fatigue under a burden of a long day, often working memory gets depleted. So in this study, mindfulness training was offered to a group of soldiers that were undergoing intensive physical training, and they were compared with other group of soldiers who also had this type of training but did not receive mindfulness. And what was found that after 8 weeks of that kind of a training, those that have had mindfulness were preserving their working memory reserves much better despite the stress. It's a very interesting study showing that mindfulness has a protective effect on working memory. There's a group of studies also looking at mindfulness and emotional regulation. And in ADHD research, we know now that emotional regulation is one of the key aspects of ADHD. We used to concentrate on attention or behavior, but we also know that emotions, particularly impulsive emotions, can be quite difficult. And so it's important to develop awareness of one's emotions and how to deal with them. And mindfulness studies, particularly in depression research, have shown that this kind of training can help a person develop resilience to depression. There are also studies looking at impulse regulation, for example, impulsive eating or anger management, that also show that mindfulness can help modulate that intense emotion. And it's very much through learning to witness the reaction in the body. You can acknowledge it in your mind, but develop a stance that allows for a space between the impulse and the actual reaction or acting out. And in addition to these cognitive aspects that we've started looking at in relationship to mindfulness, we have a long-standing research showing that mindfulness can decrease stress in diverse groups of people. And in part, it's, I think, because mindfulness teaches a different stance to stressful events. It helps us to see things that are often seen as difficult or fearful or shameful, particularly aspects of ourselves or things that get triggered in us, difficult feelings that get triggered in us, as something that can be noted, again, observed, and held with mindful awareness, held with compassion, and learn how to deal with those difficult emotional feelings in a way that allows us to learn from them as opposed to react out of them. There's also a body of research looking at relationships and how mindful speaking or communication can enhance relationships, how intimacy can be enhanced by this kind of practice. And that's also true for parenting. There's actually a couple of studies looking at mindfulness training for parents of children with ADHD showing that this kind of training can help modify the stress the parents feel, but also through that have a positive effect on the behavior of children. And lastly, mindfulness research is now happening with tools of neuroscience, such as brain imaging or EEG. And this is happening in the context of our understanding that neuroplasticity continues throughout a person's life. And we used to think that the brain develops early in life and then it does not later as we become adults. But we know that in older years, the brain is plastic, meaning it can change in response to experiences, especially if the experiences are repeated. And mental exercises, and that could be mindfulness, it could be computer training, it could be experiences outside of learning environments, you know, doing repeated activities outside or physical exercise, for example, that all these repeated experiences can have a positive impact on the brain. Some of them, if they're negative experiences, can have a negative impact on the brain. But here we want to enhance positive experiences such as mindful practice. And with that, what the research has shown is we can enhance the circuits in the brain that are important for ADHD. A recent study has shown that even with 8 weeks of training in mindfulness, there are changes in the gray matter in parts of the brain, such as prefrontal cortex, or parts of the brain responsible for reflection or self-awareness. So those studies are very exciting. There's still lots of unanswered questions, particularly questions for ADHD. We at UCLA did a study with a group of adults and teens a couple years ago showing that 8 weeks of mindfulness training can impact their symptoms of ADHD in a positive way. We had reductions in attention symptoms in particular, that we also had decreased stress, decreased anxiety, depression, and increased ability to pay attention under distracting conditions. Keep in mind, this was an initial study, and more research has to be done. Our work has been recently repeated in Australia with children with ADHD, and again showing improvements both in symptoms and some cognitive measures of ADHD. So that's very exciting. I want to highlight one more study that was done in Netherlands with mindfulness training for parents and children with ADHD, showing that the training helped the parents reduce their stress, their parenting stress, reactivity. For those who had ADHD themselves, their ADHD symptoms improved, and they also rated their children's symptoms better. The study was interesting that the teachers didn't rate the children's symptoms better, so there's still more that needs to be done. But as I mentioned, the research points to the benefit. And I wanted to bring up this background for you so you have a sense of why mindfulness is a good fit for ADHD, or why it makes sense to use it with ADHD. And in many ways, you can think of ADHD as a difficulty with self-regulation, with attention, and with relationships. And mindfulness can affect the self-regulation skills, can help with attention, and can help with relationships, particularly the relationship one has with themselves. Because ADHD, unfortunately, can often lead someone to feel self-doubt, not feel good about who they are, or, you know, think that there's something wrong with their reactions. There may be a lot of inner critical voice going on, a lot of self-judgment. So it's important to develop an understanding of that. So with mindfulness, or with enhanced awareness of these inner thoughts, feelings, or reactions, you can shift them in a positive way. So the book I've written, The Mindfulness Prescription for Adult ADHD, was to make mindfulness practices gradual and user-friendly for someone with ADHD. I wanted them to be relevant and to explain ADHD in a way that encourages curiosity, encourages a sense of discovery of yourself, or a way of understanding that is couched with mindfulness, meaning with this openness, this non-judgmental stance that can help you understand how you would want to change or what things need to be accepted and managed or worked with, and what things can be shifted. So when it comes to mindfulness, there are different kinds of practice. There's what's called formal practice, and that typically involves setting some time aside to do practice. It's as if going to a gym. You go for an hour and, you know, you do exercises. So formal practice is somewhat like that, that you set aside some time, and that time can vary. It could vary from 5 minutes to half an hour to an hour. But typically, this more formal way of sitting down, quieting yourself, and paying to aspects of your experience, whether it's something inside, like your breath, or body sensations, thoughts, feelings, or extending it to listening to sounds, letting things come and go, whether it's you know, experiences from outside or what you notice from the inside. And in that silence, allowing yourself to be more intimate with the sense of just being and sitting. That kind of practice can be difficult in ADHD, particularly for those who have hyperactive symptoms. So sitting down can sometimes feel very difficult. And an alternative to that is silent walking meditation or mindful walking. And in the book, I wanted to encourage people to explore the formal practice. With the sense of understanding and kindness to themselves. So perhaps I need to start with just a few minutes of sitting and balance this challenging yourself of sitting down and noticing the restlessness as much as you may notice any other feelings that may arise. Notice them, but not necessarily act on them. But at the same time, also know that you're not failing at meditation, you're not failing at mindfulness, that you can stay with the restlessness, or you can decide as an act of kindness to yourself that perhaps I need to stand and perhaps I need to do more walking mindfulness if I want to continue practicing. In addition to this formal practice, there's informal practice, or what we call mindfulness in daily living, and I think that's a very good practice for those with ADHD, because it's really important to develop awareness. And, you know, often we say that it's this awareness at the point of performance, or the awareness when things are happening, when the ADD patterns or ADHD patterns are coming up in life, that that's really what can make a difference. So learning to turn on, or you could say bring on this mindfulness perspective in the middle of any daily activity is really important. And in some ways, you know, I talk in the book about these steps of turning on the mindful perspective, of bringing attention to the present moment, having an attitude of openness or curiosity or non-judgmental awareness. But it's also, there's an aspect of mindful stance that is really more about allowing or dropping into awareness. So it doesn't have to necessarily seem as a lot of effort. In some ways, it's this balancing of, you know, monitoring attention, bringing your attention, checking in how you are, how you are receiving your experience, but also just allowing things to come and go. Allow yourself to just sit and notice how your mind works. Or notice that you have a tendency to, let's say, get distracted, or that it is hard to stay with your breath when you do, for example, mindfulness of breathing. And in that kind of allowing and in that kind of noticing and just being with what is, a lot can be learned. So it's important to give yourself permission to honor your experience. And if, for example, you're sitting in a mindfulness practice and you notice that I can't stay with the breath. My mind goes away so many times. That you just be with that. You notice that your mind drifted and or you catch yourself a few minutes after you've been already caught in thinking or daydreaming. And in that moment of awareness, of catching yourself, acknowledge that this is my moment of mindfulness or awareness. And value that moment of catching yourself and then bring back your attention to what you intended to pay attention to, for example, the breath. And this kind of a process of allowing and also noting where your attention is and bringing it back, it's balancing of acceptance and change. And that's a big theme in mindfulness-based therapies is learning how to accept what is. And from that acceptance, deciding what to change. And it's in a way, it's similar to the Serenity Prayer that is often used in 12 steps, for example, of knowing what to accept and knowing what to change. And that's important for ADHD because so much of the ADHD patterns, I do want to emphasize, a lot of those patterns are things we can't always control fully. You know, there may be a tendency for the mind to wander a lot or the restlessness to come up. And it's just learning how to dance with that in a way, how to be with those experiences and knowing how to tune in and recognize what do I need in that moment to help me shift how I feel or just in a way accept what's happening and just learn to stay with it without being reactive. In the program described in the book, I outline 8 steps, and it's a progressive type of a program, meaning the first steps they create a foundation for the next steps. I wanted to encourage you to start with the beginning steps, and if they feel like, you know, I'm not ready to progress, you can stay with them for a while. And, you know, sometimes just one practice that sticks with you is valuable and important and may bring a lot of shift or change in someone's life. So even though there's 8 steps, I think it's important to do it at your own pace or pick what you think resonates with you. And steps 1 and 3 are very much about learning to move away or interrupt busy thinking, because so much of our lives is about thinking or being in this automatic pilot mode, reacting or being, doing things with half awareness because part of our mind is caught up in something else. So the first 3 steps are very much about recognizing that process and learning to refocus on aspects of the present moment as a way to anchor yourself to the present moment. And the typical anchors are the senses, so tuning into senses, like a sense of smell or sound, or, for example, in mindful eating, tuning to the taste or even the feeling of the texture of food or, you know, the sense of touching. So it's opening up senses as a way to move away from busy thinking or to interrupt daydreaming and wandering mind. Another place where you can bring attention to is the breath, and that's a very powerful place to bring attention to because breathing is such a central aspect of our physiology, and by regulating breathing, by just first noticing the breathing and then also slowing down the breathing a little bit, often we induce the relaxation response, and that can have a positive feedback on attention or on the state of your thinking or emotions. So mindfulness of breathing is a very important practice. And it's also a very focusing practice. It's about returning to breathing as a way to train attention, train focus, and in a way enhance concentration. And there are different techniques that I describe in the book to help stay with the breath or to return to the breath. And sometimes it helps to have something else to anchor you to breathing, such as counting or imagining a wave of breathing going in and out. So giving your mind, especially if it's a busy mind, giving something else to do as you're noticing the breathing, so there's a sense of staying with the experience more fully, or giving yourself a little bit more ways to anchor yourself. Other places that are these fundamental anchors are sounds, because sounds are found in our environment all the time. And so in the middle of the day, if you feel overwhelmed or if you feel a sense of being distracted, sometimes just tuning into sounds for a few moments can make a difference, and just using that as a cue to become a little bit more present to how you are, what's happening around you, what you're doing, and have that expanded moment of awareness from which things can shift, or you can shift out of what you're doing if you're hyper-focusing or notice that you're distracted. So these anchors are the focus of the first three steps. And in addition to breath, any body sensation can be another anchor, or just tuning into the general feeling of how your body is, or how relaxed or how tense you feel. A practice that we did a little bit at the beginning of just noticing at yourself as your body is in that moment, whether it's sitting, standing, doing something. And after doing the first three steps, after learning how to move away or interrupt this incessant thinking that for many of us is habitual, or at least bringing a few more moments in the course of your day of that kind of a present moment awareness, we use that skill later on to explore and work more with inner experiences of thoughts or feelings of reactions. So steps 4 and 6 very much focus on that, turning attention that we moved away from thinking to now tune more into your inner self and explore what's going on. And oftentimes we have difficulty doing it, and I think in ADHD especially there's so much distraction coming from the outside that often it's difficult to tune in to yourself. And also it's harder to have a sense of yourself, particularly because of the cognitive or executive function deficits, like difficulties with working memory. A sense of yourself can be solidified by having strong executive function skills. And if you don't have them, it's a little bit harder to have that kind of sense of yourself through time. It's easier to be distracted and not have enough experience of your own feelings or your own needs or preferences. So having purposeful attention and having a period of time when you do that can be really important in ADHD. The last two steps 5 and 6, are to apply mindfulness skills to interactions with others and also to actions, particularly task management, because that's such a big aspect of ADHD, of having difficulty choosing or difficulty starting a task, difficulty progressing through it without being distracted, and then being able to finish or close the task. So I use that as a way to exemplify how mindfulness can be brought on at each aspect of doing something and expand on a deeper level of what's happening. You know, how do I feel in that moment? What's my energy? What's my interest level? Is there avoidance? Is there procrastination? Is there fear that perhaps is stopping me from either getting started or getting finished on a project. So this progression builds on each step to help you expand your awareness, to allow you to be aware of multiple aspects of yourself or the interaction and have flexible awareness or flexible attention that can be brought on, for example, in conversations. So having a sense of an impulse of interrupting before you interrupt in a conversation, or sense an emotion arising and knowing that you can be with that emotion without necessarily being flooded by it or driven by it. And in the book, I also, throughout the steps, want to encourage you to develop your own ways to taking the concepts and applying them to your daily life. So it's not another thing to do. It's not another kind of a task on your to-do list, but it's just a shift in how you approach whatever your daily life is like. So it's just a different way of being with the things that you normally would be with. For example, waking up and getting ready for work, doing that, or you know, making a point for, let's say, one day or 1 week, that the aspects of the morning routine, like brushing your teeth, become opportunities or triggers to turn in or turn on or tune in to the mindful perspective. So doing the brushing of your teeth with more awareness of the sensations or kind of how you move your hand, and using that moment, even if it's just a minute, to be a little bit more aware of yourself in your life, and knowing that through doing this, you're training your attention, you're training the aspects of cognition that will help you in other situations. It's also important to use reminders when it comes to mindfulness practice. I often say that mindfulness is not hard to do. It's actually easy to do once you have a sense of this practice. It's hard to remember to do it. For many of us, even those that practice a lot, mindfulness for a number of years, before mindfulness becomes automatic, before that repeated practice becomes more spontaneous for you, it really helps to have reminders. And reminders can be in form of visual reminders, such as making signs, especially if you're going through a training program just for 1 week, be reminded to pay attention to your senses or pay attention to the breath, or just checking in with your attention throughout the day. So having little messages for yourself can be very helpful. So whenever you catch a glimpse of the visual reminder, that becomes an opportunity to then practice. And reminders can be also, in this technological age, electronic. So using phones or calendars to program in a little reminder, whether it's in the morning or at any point during the day, or several times throughout the day, to, if you, for example, focusing on your feelings, or you're doing the step focus on emotions, that the reminder then tells you, can I tune in how I feel right now? What do I notice in my body or in my thoughts or feelings? Do I feel neutral? There's a sense of positive feeling or feeling pleasant reaction, or is there a sense of a negative reaction? And you can do that with a sense of exploration or curiosity throughout the day in different situations. How do I feel when I interact with this person? Or what comes up for me when I'm talking to this person, or when I'm about to do this task? And reminders are also other people. So being in a class or having a community that you could practice with can be really important in teaching mindfulness or learning mindfulness. And I would encourage you, if you do have already a community, if there are other people that are interested in becoming more present or becoming more able to develop, you know, to self-regulate, to have these skills that mindfulness brings, and just to be more present and center in your own life, know how to manage stress and not be driven so much by the ADHD symptoms, that you can have kind of a partner in mindfulness training. You can read the book together, or you can explore other resources on mindfulness together. And also looking for ways that you already are mindful and perhaps didn't fully allow what you're doing to be this conscious acknowledgement that I'm being more present or more aware. For example, some of you may be doing photography or do art. A lot of these artistic endeavors, they call for more present moment awareness. And just as you're doing it, just acknowledge to yourself a little bit more consciously how you are when you that attentive or that focused or that present and moved away from just thinking or planning or engrossed in something else, and just learning how to recognize that mindful awareness space. Yoga or other movement techniques such as Tai Chi or martial arts are also very much training of awareness. And you can enhance those practices, again, by expanding this conscious acknowledgement of how am I as I'm doing this? How is my body inside? And what else do I notice in terms of my attitude as I'm doing this? Being in nature is another great way to connect with a sense of mindful awareness. This, again, noting moment by moment how things are and taking it in and observing it with curiosity. That's a nice way of kind of recognizing that you can be shifted into that space spontaneously. So with that, aware of time, I wanted to finish this portion and invite some questions from you and see if I can cover some things that perhaps you had questions about. Hi, I am back.
Hi, I apologize for that. I muted myself and I went to unmute. I tried to call back in and the lines were busy. So, like, how do people, can people use mindfulness, or how can they use mindfulness at work to block out their coworkers or other things that are distracting them?
Yeah. Well, mindfulness can be helpful in a sense that once you practice it, it can help you develop a greater sense of where your attention is going to. So if there's a lot of noises or distractions in the office, one way that can be helpful is to practice foreground and background awareness. So focusing more on what you're doing as your foreground attention, and allowing the noises or the distractions to come and go, and you won't be able to block them out completely, but just to be aware of it in a different way, that there's this, a certain way of, instead of pulling your attention, that it's more in the background. So there's this more expanded or receptive attention that you're practicing, with majority of it on what you want to pay attention to, and some of it acknowledging the distractions, but not giving it as much power. So sometimes that can help. At the same time, if the environment is very noisy or distracting, there's a limit to what you can do. I think certainly using earplugs or, having a way to lower the noise level, either by having a space that's more quiet where you can work, at least go to when you need to concentrate on a project, can be helpful. So in that sense, you know, there's a limit to what you can do with mindfulness. There has to be an acknowledgement that sometimes you have to, you know, whether to talk to your boss and look for ways to modify the environment. But in terms of own reactivity to noises or your own sense of distraction and being kind of frustrated by it, that's something that we can learn to modify. And, you know, recognizing that these noises and distractions are sounds that are coming and going, and learning to just allow it come and go and witness them without necessarily being too pulled by it or, you know, too frustrated by it.
Okay. And can you repeat the name of your book and how people can get it? We've actually had quite a few people writing in saying they have your book and they found it really helpful.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to hear that. The book title is The Mindfulness Prescription for Adult ADHD. And it can be found in most stores. You can find it on Amazon. If you wanted to take a look inside the book, you can go to a website that I created for the book called mindfulness-adhd.com. And I also wanted to invite people who are reading the book or having questions or wanted to connect with others that maybe are interested in this area to consider joining a Facebook page called Mindfulness ADHD ADD that I'm hoping will become a place or where we can create a community of those who are interested in this approach and exchange, you know, questions and people's own creative ways of applying it.
And we also had a couple of questions about medication. Will your mindfulness program replace medication, or what are your thoughts on medication with mindfulness?
That's a very good question. You know, I think we have different tools for ADHD, and medication is one tool, mindfulness is another, cognitive therapy is another, you know, working with diet and kind of lifestyle routine and, you know, managing sleep. They're all different, very helpful ways to help with ADD or ADHD. I think it's, you know, first of all, it's important to recognize ADHD exists on a spectrum. There's some people that have more symptoms. They're, you know, they have a greater number of difficulties than others. And so depending on the degree of ADHD, I think mindfulness can be helpful and can be a substitute to medications. But when the symptoms are more severe or more difficult to control, then using medication in combination with mindfulness can be helpful. And in fact, you know, we recognize that medications are often limited. They can address aspects of ADHD, and they can be quite helpful for some people. But, you know, learning skills and learning a way of kind of working with the challenges is as important and often empowering to have these other non-medication tools.
Okay, we also had a few questions about what do you recommend for tools or how do you recommend people to remind themselves to be mindful?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, so there are different ways. One way could be coupling mindfulness practice with something that you do every day. So if you tend to work in the office and the first thing you do is turn on your computer, I would put a little post-it note and say, whenever I turn on the computer, use that as an opportunity to take a few deeper breaths or just notice the sounds or notice how you feel in that moment. So doing, you know, taking something that you do every day and couple it with mindfulness practice can work. Other reminders, as I mentioned, would be using your phone or a calendar and just write in little reminder. So that can make a difference. There are many apps on the phone right now for all kinds of phones that mm-hmm. use kind of short tuning into the present moment guided mindfulness meditation. So those can be helpful for people that use their phone quite a bit. And even texting, you know, having a mindfulness body, just like you, a body like you have an exercise body, for example. So you can text each other or check in, and just, you know, talking about mindfulness with each other can help you reinforce the practice and asking each other how have you been doing with that or with a particular you know, exercise. But, you know, any type of reminders that already work for you in other settings can be used for mindfulness. My personal favorite is in the work where I, in a place where I work a lot, I have a frame with the word breath. So it's just a little picture frame where I put the, you know, a piece of paper with breath written on it. And every time I see it, it reminds me, oh, let me just notice my breath right now. And changing that so it doesn't become boring or you get habituated to the reminder, so you have a new reminder from time to time.
And we have somebody, a few people keep asking the same question. Do you plan to release your book as an e-book or on the Kindle or the Nook?
I've asked the publisher that, and there is a plan to release it as a Kindle version, but that's not available yet, but it will be in the future.
Oh, great. Thank you. And before we go tonight, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave people with about mindfulness?
I would emphasize that mindfulness very much is kind of rediscovering the sense of presence that we all already know about. There is a practice, there's a technique and steps that can be very informative, but it's very much a way of, you know, allowing yourself not to be trying so hard to be something that perhaps you think you should be doing or expectations of others, or allowing yourself to reconnect with a sense of how you are right now and recognizing the inner resources, or there's this awareness that we can all tap into as a source of understanding, or this you know, curious, non-judgmental, open awareness that can really shift things for us and allow us to be more connected to our lives, to ourselves, and to others. I just want to, you know, not to lose sight of that.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and I'd like to thank you for giving an excellent teleseminar. Thanks so much, everyone, and have a great night. Goodbye.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Tara.